This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Downtown San Francisco. This is 95.7 The Game.
Oh, welcome one, welcome all. This is Warriors This Week. Sam Lubman, Evan Giddings rocking with you. That's right, you heard it. DeVone's out for the week. Lubman's going to be holding it down. He has been here before. He will be here again. He is here to reign. Unlike the Golden State Warriors, it feels like the past week, Sam. But we got a lot to get into, okay, today. It feels like everyone around the Bay, much like, I don't know if it's the weather, it's been a bit dreary, a little dreadful with the Niners season effectively coming to a close. We're going to have some fun over the next 3 hours, I think.
Yeah, hello there, Evan. It is, we are coming to rain today, much like the weather outside, which is, you know, a little frightful, but the feeling in this studio is quite delightful. So, yeah, definitely going to be fun talking some fun dubs today. And, yeah, it is kind of feel like a new beginning for sports in the Bay Area with the Niners kind of being pushed out of the way and the Warriors, the meat of the season, come along. Got some trade winds blowing here for the Warriors as well. We got a long layoff for the Warriors, too. They got one game in a seven-day period. I was listening to Steve Kerr on Willard and Dibbs yesterday. They did a great job. Check that out on the Odyssey app if you get a chance. But Kerr's talking about they're going to have 3-4 practices in a seven-day span, which is very hard to do during the NBA season. So, yeah, a lot of fun stuff going on.
Yeah, almost impossible. By the way, speaking of wins, thank you to you, Sam Lubman. Thank you to Steve Rizzotto for being here. Thank you to Cam Williams for being here. We got two producers back there that are A-plus grade. Dude, there was so many trees that were blown over my neighborhood that I almost did not make it here this morning. It was there was a tornado apparently last night up the tornado warning up the peninsula.
We've had a tsunami warning and a tornado warning in the last couple weeks here in the Bay Area.
Yeah, but this one we actually saw some damage being done because I woke up this morning. Unfortunately, I live on an undisclosed street in the Mission, and there were a bunch of trees that were blown down all across different sides of the street. They were on top of cars. Fortunately, I missed mine, but it made it almost impossible for me to get out of the parking spot that I was between these two trees until one had gotten cleared. So thank you to all of you for holding it down. It was a close call this morning.
Yeah, shout out the SF city workers. Shout out all the city workers, because, yeah, when storms like this, all the trees go down and stuff like that, that's some tough work to have to do in this weather to go out, move those trees. It's a thankless job. So you know what? Thank you to all the city workers all over the Bay Area who are going to be busy cleaning up our lovely cities throughout this storm.
Yeah, my ungrateful ass. I was like, oh my gosh, can we get this tree out of the way, please? I got to get to work.
Are you honking at the horn?
I got to talk Warriors for 3 hours. And they're like,
don't you know who I am?
Like, dude, you do realize this is a 2-ton branch that we're trying to move off the side of a street while traffic is still going.
It's a piece of wood. How heavy could it be?
Hold your freaking horses. Oh my gosh. Well, apparently the Warriors need some more horses because on the gosh, like the NBA Cup quarterfinals. I feel glad that we don't have to really roll through that anymore. It would have been fun. I know Whitley Sangiotta was really looking forward to going to Vegas this weekend. Wink, wink.
Yeah, she loves Las Vegas.
But instead, we're going to have to settle for Klay Thompson coming back to the Bay Area for a Sunday matinee. That was the game that you're talking about, the one game in 7 days mm-hmm. between the Wednesday matchup between the Warriors and the Rockets that they lost, which we can dig into. And then, of course, next Thursday when they play the Memphis Grizzlies. That's right, from the 650, the Comcast Business Text Line, and PGE workers. You are absolutely correct.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, people are freaking getting after it to try and help us have our Netflix. So thank you very much.
Good applause there. Good
ladies
applause.
And gentlemen, it is the weekend.
Yay!
It is the weekend. It's also time to kind of dig into the, I don't know, the crux of, I don't know what you want to call it, the issue. The meat on the bone that is the Golden State Warriors right now, Sam, because I don't know. Let's first catch up because we haven't done a show together like this in quite some time. Where are you at with the Warriors before we get into what happened Wednesday, what we think needs to be done, and the potential maybe even trades on the horizon? Where are you at with the Warriors?
Yeah, I mean, this feels like a Warriors team that is, quite frankly, Evan, it's good. I don't know if they're great just yet. It's kind of hard because, you know, they get off to that hot start to the season. They start like 10-2. They're 12-3 at one point. And they're making sweet music while they do it. We're having the Buddy Hield revolution in the process there. And then they hit a skid, and you kind of have a situation where it's like, who are the real Warriors? Are they the team that started off, you know, 12-3 to start the season? Or are they the team that has lost six of their last seven clutch time games? This is a team that's kind of really struggled these last few weeks. That five-game losing streak had all, you know, Warrior fans all up in their feelings. And it just feels like a team that I think can get out of the play-in tournament. You know, I think they can notch one of those top six seeds right now just because the West is just such a mess. And we talk about, you know, how messy the streets are right now. And then we got the Western Conference is right up there. You know, they got tree branches they're trying to clear out of there too. But, I mean, you look at what's kind of coming up here, Evan, and the Warriors, they really have an interesting chance here to kind of climb up in the standings here. They're a game and a half back of the Mavericks for the four spot right now. I believe they're the five spot in the standings as we're talking right now. And then right after that, they go to Memphis. Well, not right after that. There's a 3-4 day break in there. They go to Memphis, where they currently hold the two seed right now. They are 2.5 back of the Grizzlies for that two spot. So they have a chance to kind of move up here in the standings these next few days and kind of assert themselves as one of the more dominant players in the West. But the West is so jumbled right now that, you know, a two-game winning streak moves you up, but a two-game losing streak could also devastate you. So they're just kind of smack dab in the middle of the West trying to figure out where they're going to go, up or down.
Well, Sam, it's the reason why I asked that is because the Niners have had me, I don't know, recalibrating the way that I'm approaching particular seasons, because mm-hmm. I do think how you enter a year is important with how you deal with the inevitable roller coaster ride. Now, for the Niners, for example, there was a lot more valleys than peaks. For the Warriors, they started off with a massive peak, and now it feels like, I don't know, maybe they're coming out of a little bit of a valley, or they might still be stuck there because of these late-game issues that kind of persist with this team. The reason why I ask that is because I feel like if you are under the guise that this is a top six seed, well, then you might be a little bit shaky about this team because there's some concerning parts that maybe other teams among the top six don't have, particularly in the final 5 minutes of a basketball game. But I felt like this Warriors team was going to be at or around the same win mark as last year. I think at the beginning of the season, I forget whether I was talking to Devontae, who, of course, you work with in the Morning Roast, or whether it was Steiny, but it was about 44 or 45 wins.
Well, that had to be Steiny because Bonte has this belief that they're going to get over 50. So,
Well, hey, look, they might.
There was a minute where that kind of looked like it was possible, and honestly, they're not completely out of that running yet. I mean, we've seen this team at the start of the year. We know how hot they can be, so yeah, not totally crazy.
Gotcha. And by the way, for our YouTube audience, we got in a little bit late. That is Sam Lubman. He's producer for the Morning Roast. Does a fantastic job from 6 to 10 a.m. working with, as we mentioned, Bonte Hill, Joe the Butcher Boy Shasky, and all the rest. Filling in for Dan Devone here on Warriors this week from 9 to noon. And so, yeah, like I think if your expectations are about the same as last year, I don't think it means that you're expecting a ton of
frustration, but it means that you have an understanding that this team is going to have limitations. And right now, their limitations, I don't think they showed through the first 15 games because, in my opinion, Sam, they were more together and they were playing with a chemistry that a lot of teams, it takes them about 15 to 20 games to find. And that was their advantage over better opponents, or I should say more talented opponents. Now, you're beginning to see other teams that are or already have, like the Rockets. The Rockets clearly have an identity. Their identity might be dumb basketball, but their identity is they're going to get into you, they're going to force you off the three-point line, they're going to play aggressive defense, and then they'll just figure it out offensively. On Sunday, the Dallas Mavericks obviously know what their identity is. What they had to do is integrate someone like Klay Thompson and other kind of smaller ancillary pieces. So the Warriors, I think the first 15 games, the big reason why they were successful is they could basically use what they found already in preseason over teams, whereas now the talent gap or basically their lack of big boys, it's starting to show a little bit. And unfortunately, it's starting to show at the end of basketball games.
Yeah, and that's we'll definitely get into those late game collapses soon. But the thing we heard a lot at the start of the season was the vibes are good. We're all feeling, everyone was all smiles. It was all candy and unicorns to start this season off. And you can't really go that deep into a season on just vibes. I would say you could probably go about 15 games in the season on just vibes. And that would kind of encapsulate that 12-3 start. But it just seems like these vibes, they were tested. You know, start with that San Antonio loss. They had a lead late. They fell apart, and they just slid from there. Brooklyn, they collapsed late. Oklahoma City, they collapsed late. They had the loss of the Nuggets where, they're up, you know, how much were they up on the Nuggets? They were up 11 on the Nuggets with 6 minutes to play.
Yeah, they're up 6 with like 2.5 left.
Yeah, and your thing is like, oh, come on, there's no way. And I'll be honest, I mean, it feels like we're banging our heads on the table trying to figure out why they keep collapsing down the stretch. It's become such a massive mystery, but we saw, you know, earlier on the season, the first time they played the Rockets, they blew a 31-point lead, and they were able to, you know, pull that out in overtime. So you're able to kind of brush that one aside a little bit. But moments like that this season, they were popping up early on. So it's not super surprising that they're collapsing late right now just because you saw those hints early on. But it's incredibly concerning because this is a team that really struggled in clutch games last year. They're playing a lot of clutch games this year, 15 already. They're 7-8 in those games. And it's the exact same issues that we saw at the end of games last year. You have turnovers, which that's always kind of been a feature of this Warriors team going back to, you know, the first title run. But it's you're not getting the scoring punch late in games that you usually got. And I don't know if that's just Steph's legs not feeling it, Jonathan Kuminga just not executing. You got, you know, sometimes you got young players making dumb turnovers. It's starting to get more and more concerning every day, every time they blow one of these late games, culminating with the Rockets on Wednesday.
Well, also because this hasn't been a thing that's just happened last year. It's been like ever since they won the championship in 2022, it feels like that preceding or a following year, excuse me, they've sort of struggled to close out opponents consistently. And this year, you know, it's been for a lot of different reasons. I think last year it was for slightly different reasons. But at the end of the day, they've really struggled. Now, let's focus it on the Houston game, for example, because you brought up the Denver game. That reminded me a lot of the Nuggets game. I think there were some subtle differences that we can get into and I think lead to a larger conversation. But just taking a look at that game, you were up by, 6 points with 77 seconds left, and you couldn't win that game. And unfortunately, it used to be a foreign feeling, the Warriors blowing a double-digit or a two-possession lead with, you know, a minute or even 2 or 3 minutes left. Now it's like, oh my gosh, here we go again. And what can they do to prevent it? That is going to dictate how successful they are this season. I think that is really the question that is going to determine whether or not, to your point, Sam, they are a top six seed, or maybe to Bonte's point, they are a 50-win team, or whether they're a team that's in the play-in again. Because I think you saw the floor of this group last year, that even with suspensions and injuries and absences, they could still kind of crawl in as a 10 seed.
It's kind of like if you have Steph, you have a chance. You know, like he's good enough to kind of, Steph and Draymond, they're good enough to just elevate a team to, you know, somewhat contender status for a playoff spot.
Well, play in contending
play
status.
In playoff. When you have Steph and Draymond, you're in a good spot to get at minimum the top ten spot.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't think that's high of a bar. I mean, to be a top 20 team in basketball is not something you should strive to be. And I don't think Curry and Draymond would co-sign that at all.
Well, you mentioned the floor, so that's kind of where I was going with on that one. Like, when you have Steph and Draymond, that floor is going to be a little bit more elevated than these teams that aren't going to be able to make it into the play-in tournament.
Well, but you got to factor in the fact that Draymond missed 25 games last season due to his own actions. But I'm saying, if they're healthy, yes, to me, the floor is the play-in. You got to be better than that, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely have to be better than a play-in.
We're trying to get
Steph
a fifth ring, not a play-in championship. Absolutely.
We are. I don't know. To me, the idea of must get him a fifth championship is a little overblown. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't love to see Steph hoist a fifth title, but I do think that we have to be realistic that goal is a very difficult one to obtain for any player that's 36 years old and still the best player on their team. I mean, how many players can you name that have been that old that have been the number one for a title team?
Ooh, that old for a title team. How old was LeBron in 2020?
He was 35. Okay, but I would make the case that Anthony Davis was a better player in those playoffs than he was.
No, but I mean, that's probably the closest I could get for a player at that age, playing at that level, to where they could take a team to a championship. That's the closest I would get.
Well, no, and I'm not. It's not supposed to be a quiz. My point is that what I believe the Warriors are trying to ask Curry to do with this roster, it's almost unfair. It's almost no one has been asked to do this before, because players at that advanced of an age, you can go down the list. After the age of 34, which is ironically the last time that the Warriors won a championship when Curry was their alpha, Michael Jordan's last championship, I believe, was at age 34. LeBron James was age 35, but he had a running mate. I think it was Tim Duncan who was the oldest, but Kawhi Leonard might have been the best player in those finals.
Yeah, that 13 Spurs team.
Exactly. So there are players that are of an advanced stage that have won championships, obviously, but not as the guy that is being asked to do everything and carry the franchise the way that Curry does and probably is going to continue to do until the Warriors decide to either make a move or decide to, I don't know, go out and acquire some help. I just feel like, and what we saw against Houston was just that. They literally put the ball in his hands, I believe, four straight possessions. Well, maybe not four straight, because they tried to throw one down low to Kuminga and Draymond threw it out of bounds. But for three of the last four possessions, maybe even four of the last five, they gave the ball to Curry and said, bail us out. And I think that Curry took a pretty bad shot. The decision-making to shoot with essentially 11 seconds left when you had a 3-second shot clock, game clock separation, was a poor decision. But it was because he was trying to go for the kill. And the Warriors, down the stretch of games, when he plays, it feels like their strategy is just give the ball to Steph and he's going to guide us home. And he can do that. We saw him do it against Dallas. He did it earlier in the year against Boston. But he can't do it all the time.
It's going to be fewer and further between. And even back, in the Warriors' heyday, that was never really their MO of just putting the ball in the hands of one guy and just saying, go get it done. It's always been, we say the strength in numbers, but even during the heyday, the Warriors, they were getting all the guys involved there in those closing games. It was never just let Steph cook, because when you have, a KD or a Klay, you don't really need to do that. And you add that, so now it's a totally different situation, obviously. Those two aren't here anymore. Steph is your alpha scorer, but you're in a situation where at age 36, he's putting up some very concerning career lows. His 22.8 points per game is his lowest in a full season since 2013. He's playing the fewest minutes per game in a full season of his career. He's shooting 45% from the field, the third worst in his career. So he's having some pretty concerning career lows this season so far, while at the same time being asked, as you mentioned, Evan, to take on this massive load down the stretch here. And I'll be honest, I think it was watching during that Nuggets game. There was a period in the first quarter where I'm watching Steph and I'm just like, it just kind of hits me out of nowhere. Like, oh my God, what if he's actually getting old now? I mean, he's 36 years old, but it's going to happen eventually.
He's old.
Yeah. Like Father Time, we always say.
He is old.
It is undefeated. Basketball old, 36 is basketball old. But yeah, it's getting to a point where it's just like, you kind of have to, it just kind of hit me. I had this realization, like, he's not that young player that we always see him as. Because, you know, he's the babyface assassin. He always has that young look. It's, for me personally, it just, I never really considered Steph's aging until, I guess, just this year. I'll be honest, I legitimately thought that he could age like LeBron, to where he would be playing at a high level into his age 37, 38, 39, even his age 40 season, where LeBron, you know, we're talking about he's dropped off this year. He's still averaging 25 a game. Like, LeBron's drop-off still has him as one of the top players in the league. And it's kind of a reality now that I don't think Steph is going to age that gracefully, which, you know, isn't a knock. It's really hard to age that gracefully. But when you're talking about, you know, how high the Warriors can go, how much they can rely on Steph, I'm a guy who always believes that if you have Steph, you have a chance. But at the same time, how much longer can we fall back on that belief? How much longer can we fall back on, if you have Steph, you have a chance? Because he has bailed us out a couple times. He has bailed the Warriors out a couple times this year, but it's, as the season goes on, you're not going to be able to count on that as much.
Well, I do co-sign the statement that if you have Steph, you have a chance. But that's what you have, a chance.
You need a little bit more than the chance.
A chance is not good enough anymore. Mm-hmm. Or a chance could get you beat. Because if you're playing a really good team, and I wasn't a believer originally at the start of the season in Houston, but they're clearly a good basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
And they're good because of their defense.
Great rebounding team.
Well, just, but the one thing that frustrates the Warriors clearly, and particularly Steph at his advanced age, is pressure. You know, especially in a game like that, in which fouls are not being called, the refs are largely letting players play. The Warriors do not have a ton of guys that can handle the ball and not be loose with it, a la 22 turnovers. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's the kind of game that, I don't know if it's similar to the postseason or, but it's a kind of game you have to win in the postseason eventually. Yes, you got to outscore opponent. You got to win different ways, but that's the kind of muck it up 90s basketball game that you might have to win if you get to the postseason.
Mm-hmm. Especially running to the Rockets, because they're looking like a team that, again, they're a young team right now. They're playing high. They're believing in themselves. There's a lot of season left, but that's the kind of a team that you're going to have to go through now in the postseason if you want to make that climb up. And you look at some of these other teams they got to deal with. The Thunder, you know, they're going to have Chet Holmgren back soon. They're a load to deal with even without Chet. We're going to see how the Warriors match up with the Grizzlies this week. The Mavericks, they're playing obviously well, Spike Clay having some ups and down shootings. But, and then, of course, the Nuggets. They're always hanging around there, too. And the Nuggets have been the Warriors' kryptonite for the last couple of years. So, yeah, to your point, it's, I agree with that statement. It's just, when it gets into the playoffs, the method of just, I think, leaning only on Steph to carry the day gives you a chance. But that's not a strategy. That's a hope this works out and figure out what happens in the next game. That's not going to carry you through the whole playoffs,
though. No, but I think it's what the Warriors are resigned to. You know, they are in a position where, just because of the structure of their roster, like, that is the best course of action on a given night, is to just lean into your best player, right? I mean, I'm watching the Suns and the Jazz last night, and what do the Suns do for the last 5 minutes of a game? They literally just threw the ball to KD in the post. And there's also a team with Devin Booker. Bradley Beal didn't play last night, but like, they have other players that can take the ball. They just give it to KD every time. Same thing in the Timberwolves-Lakers game, down the stretch of that game. It's just Ant with the ball. Now, and the Warriors, I think, are trying to figure out whether or not they need to lean more into that, or because of what happened against Houston, where they did do that, and what we saw was two 24-second shot clock violations, a turnover from Draymond, and a rushed open three from Curry that could have won the game.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get to his sound in a minute. But he was right. If he makes that shot, they're going to Vegas. But the idea of a make-or-miss situation, I don't know. Like, the Warriors are kind of in that position right now, and we're trying to figure out if they can evolve out of that, because at the beginning of this year, they were blowing teams out. When they score more than 120 points, I think they're 9-1. So they've shown that they can win those close, low-scoring games before, but they got to find a way to generate some more offense, not just in the half court at the end of games, but also over the course of games. We've seen Buddy Hield, who you mentioned, Sam, at the beginning of the show regress a little bit. We've seen a lack of volume three-point shooting from the Warriors that was supposed to be a philosophical emphasis coming into the season. And as we move on here on Warriors This Week, I do want to get the conversation rolling with whoever out there wants to chime in. 888-957-9570 is the number. Evan Giddings, Sam Lubman with you here for 3 hours every Saturday. Warriors This Week, Saturday mornings. I just made it in time. I'm glad to be rocking with my guy, Sam.
Buzzer beater.
Apologize for everybody. I cut off in traffic rolling down 3rd Street. That's my bad. I see you from the 415 for the 925 chiming in. We'll get to your text messages on the other side. But right now, what right now do you feel like is the biggest thing that ails the Warriors? We're going to try to dig into it, solve it as we move forward here on Warriors This Week. We're back after this on 95.7 The Game.
Back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, let me welcome everybody to the Wild Wild West. All right, Evan Giddings, Sam Lubman, Warriors This Week, 9 to noon. You know, Sam, all right, one thing that Dan DeVone and I like to usually do is...
Your one thing?
Mess around a little bit. So, before we dive deep back into the Warriors, I got a quick question for you, and I hate to put you on the spot, but Steven, he sparked my mind. He's such a young, bright mind. Both he and you, by the way... As a quick aside, before we get to the hypothetical, you guys were at the Willie Adames conference, correct, at Oracle Park. In fact, you had the second question of the entire Willie introduction.
Had to force my way in there, yeah. So
you also sounded a little hesitant. I don't know if you expected to go second. Is that correct?
No, I did. I'll be honest. I still get a little bit, you know, nervous and excited when I ask these questions. So I went back and listened. I was like, oh, you can't really tell. But now the fact that you could tell makes me a little bit more self-conscious about it. But
well, because the first question is usually for a normal beat writer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I couldn't tell because after that point, I don't know if it was a free-for-all. Sometimes press conferences are wide open. Other times they have microphones.
Yeah, no, so let me... I'll peel back the curtain here a little bit. So usually how this works with Giants games is that a lot of these pressers or even the post-game stuff, you know, after games... Usually Susan Slusser gets the first question. You know, she's been the longtime beat writer for the Giants and the A's. She's one of the best in the business. She was a one-time president of the Baseball Writers Association of America. So she's been around long enough to where she's kind of earned the right to, you know, be that top dog on the Giants beat. So she'll usually get the first question.
Mm-hmm.
And so my thought was like, you know what? I'll let her get the first question as is tradition. But I'm getting that second one. I'm asserting myself. I'm cutting my way to the front of the line, and I'm letting everyone know that I'm going to get that second question. So I like to think I essentially got the first question because Susan's question's obviously a given to go first. So and then the morning show host for the other station went right after me. So yeah, you know, gotta plant the flag a little bit.
Well, it also means you don't have to come up with a second question in case someone steals your question.
Well, Steve, that's the other one, yeah.
No, but Steve, you also so did you speak? Did you ask a question during the press conference as well, or did you? I saw you talking to Bob Melvin after the presser, right?
Yeah, so I asked him towards the end. You know, the microphone was going around, so you know I had to get my hand on the microphone. But yeah, Sam and I talked one-on-one with a few people after. Sam talked to Bob. I talked to Bob. Sam also talked to Zach Manassian, the new general manager. Like Sam was talking to Larry Bear too. Maybe try and get him on the station at some point.
Oh, that's cool.
We're trying to get him on the show and trying to get him to come down to. I know we're talking about Giants right now, but
we're talking about sports media and the behind the scenes kinds of. I don't know the probing that you guys do, how we get the bottom to the bottom of the information. We're
this
talking
how the
about
sausage is made, you know.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking about the shadows that people don't get to see that often.
Yes. So yeah, talk with Larry a bit. Obviously, we're trying to get him to come on the show, and we're trying to get him to come down to Sunnyvale next Friday. For in case you guys don't know, we got the Morning Roast 3rd Annual Doobie Awards coming up this next Friday, December 20th at Laughing Monk Brewing in Sunnyvale. We'll be there from 6 to 10 a.m., but you want to get there early. It's going to be a big-time party. I mean, you got free food, free drinks, hang out with all the roasters and all the other listeners. We already got 75 people who have RSVP'd to confirm that they're going to be there.
Yeah, I'm pissed because Steining Guru said I can't go because I got to do the show after you guys.
Yeah, I apologize for that.
No, Laughing Monk is an awesome place. The food is fantastic. The company will be great. If you can get up that early, I would absolutely recommend going.
Absolutely. It's not easy to get up that early. Trust me, as someone who's a professional at getting up early. But if you can get down there, Laughing Monk Brewing, 12 to 6 in Sunnyvale this Friday, December 20th, it's going to be a pretty big party. So giving away a lot of awards, going to have a lot of fun. So, yeah, definitely want to be there. So, yeah, it'll be fun. Try to get Larry Bear there as well. So that's where that aside came from.
Yeah, that's a big TBD. Sam Lubman, Evan Giddings, Warriors This Week. Are there any Warriors-based Doobie Awards? Like, what is a Doobie Award?
So the Doobie Awards are basically, we're honoring moments that have taken place throughout the morning roast throughout the year. So the categories we have our caller, or the call of the year. So obviously, here at 95.7, we take calls every day, 888-957-9570, calling some of your Warriors takes right now. And on the morning roast, we get some weird callers every now and then, or we get some really exciting callers, some really loud callers. Some calls are just better than the others. So we have a few calls that we call the call of the year. So we give that away. We also encourage people to call in and do little freestyle raps or recite some poetry if they choose to, because that's just the attitude we create on the morning roast. So we're got to have an award for the best freestyle or poem of the year. We got our best mispronunciation of the year, because on the morning roast, we're always not saying words correctly.
Yeah, so, I've heard a few.
Yes, so there's a lot to choose from there. Obviously, we're doing our top moment of the show. We're doing our best guest of the year. We have a lot of recurring guests that come on the show. Dave Fleming, Mike Florio, Herm Edwards, Anthony Slater, Jerry Rice, Terrell Owens. Those are your guest of the year nominations. Baldy is a two-time winner, so we kind of had to retire him this year.
Well, so what? He's the Steph Curry of the Morning Roast Doobie Awards, and he doesn't get to qualify?
That's basically how it is. You know, it'd be Baldy every year.
Is he too old?
We just get other people mixed in. It's kind of like, you know, when someone else would get the MVP just so Michael Jordan wouldn't get it. It's kind of something like that. We got our roaster of the year. You know, will it be Tony in Oakland? Will it be Brian in Palo Alto? Will it be Adam in the city? So there's a lot of fun times we had just to kind of honor the show, honor the listeners, and, you know, just force Odyssey to make us do a remote location somewhere with free food.
Well, wait, we do have a question from the Comcast Business Text Line. Again, I promise we'll get back into the Warriors. I see Rich in Daly City. Please hold on. We got some people calling in at 888-957-9570. You want to get into what ails the Warriors right now, what you believe that they can do right now at 14-10 to get this season where it needs to go and get back on track. But real quick, there is a question.
Yeah, what is it?
From the 415. Is Laughing Monk pet friendly? Can you bring your dog?
I believe they are pet friendly, yes. I believe that is the case. I should get confirmation on that.
Okay, sweet. Awesome. That is very good.
I believe they are pet friendly. It's a brewing company, so usually they are.
That's true. That is a good point. I feel like a lot of places in the city, because my brother has a dog, if he's listening, this dog has no teeth, he has a wonky eye, and he loves everybody and everyone, but the moment you bring him into any single place, he will jump on anybody. So it needs to be pet friendly, and people need to be okay with slobber. It sounds like Laughing Monk is one of those places.
Oh, yeah. We'll be slobbering all over the food and drinking. Lots of good times, too. So.
That's a visual. All right. 888-957-9570.
Slobber some Orioles.
is the number. Evan Giddings and Sam Lubman filling in for Dan Devone here on Warriors This Week, taking up until noon. Steve, Cam in the building as well. Steve, we could go out to Daly City, talk to Rich, wants to get into some of the Warriors' moves. Rich, welcome to the program. What's going on?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Hope you guys are staying dry and dodging those random tornadoes, you know?
Dude, I'll tell you what, man. I was trying this morning. They almost got me.
He's not in Kansas anymore, I'll say that.
Right on. Hey, I'm a old school Warriors fan going back to the Sleepy Floyd days. But, I think the challenge for me for the Warriors is I think we need to work. I mean, Kerr needs to demonstrate some trust. I mean, not since Livingston, he seems to have, I mean, they used to have a standardized kind of lineup where certain people would kind of come in at certain times, and it seems like he's deviated from that. But I'd like to see is maybe have two lines, the old guys and then the new guys. Let the new guys early in the season develop some chemistry and get the playing time, like Moody, you know, JK, Pods, you know, Waters and TJD, let them play as a second line and just bring them in, as opposed to all this chain yanking they're doing. And I mean, as a young guy, I can only imagine all that chain yanking is messing with their confidence. I don't know what you guys think.
Gotcha. No, thanks, Rich. I mean, unfortunately, on Wednesday, I believe Moody was unavailable. That was actually a player I was thinking about, Sam, as far as, you know, if Moody has one of those nice little stretches. I don't know if he's going to play extended period of time because he generally doesn't. But sometimes he has those games where he'll give you, like, 12 points in 7 minutes or 8 points in 4 minutes. He can kind of be a little spark plug. And in a game in which you only score 90 points, it's absolutely valuable. But what we saw on Wednesday is really, again, just Kerr. I mean, he played a total of 10 guys, but it was basically five players that played more than 30 minutes, and that was Pajemski, which always draws a lot of ire, Buddy Hield, Steph Curry, Kuminga, and then Draymond. So it does feel like the Warriors are beginning to, I don't want to say go away from what made them successful in those like hockey line changes that Rich was talking about, but maybe more of a necessity, like, we got to establish who our best players are, and those players got to play heavy minutes.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they're in a situation right now, their best players are, it's Draymond and Steph right now. They're going to be trusting those guys no matter what.
And Wiggins was out for
Wiggins
that
game too, yeah. When Wiggins is not available, that obviously hurts as well. But I think to Rich's point, you know, if you're trying to get these guys in, I feel like that's what they're trying to do with Jonathan and Kuminga. You know, I think, you know, Steve Kerr, when he was on with Willard and Dibbs, you know, he kind of talked about how, you know, they're trying to empower Kuminga more. That's what they want. You know, Draymond, Steph, they've gone on record saying that they see him as that next guy. Draymond going to the bench, acknowledging that, you know, that's how he got his start, was a veteran going to the bench and him being inserted into the starting lineup, having the kind of the wherewithal to be able to acknowledge that, you know, the times have kind of circled back around. Now Draymond is that vet who needs to go to the bench to get Kuminga in there. So it seems like the Warriors are trying to do that. But yeah, no, to your point, it seems every week we're hearing Warriors fans complaining about the lack of consistent rotations, and it's hard not to see these collapses down the stretch along with these inconsistent rotations and just kind of throw your hands up in exasperation.
Well, you mentioned Kerr on with Lillard and Dibbs yesterday. I want to get to that sound. He was talking about Kuminga and really why I thought it was a pretty big move, him essentially choosing, I think it was last Friday, so just a little over a week ago, him choosing to put Kuminga into the starting lineup when Curry, Wiggins, and Draymond were all available, which is not something he's done so far throughout Kuminga's career. Here's what he had to say.
We are giving him, you know, more opportunity for sure. And that's the plan, you know. I mean, I think you guys are well aware. I mean, we've been experimenting with, we've had 13 different starting lineups this year. And the tricky part of all this, to get cut right to the chase, is, you know, Draymond's best as a four. And if Draymond's the four, it's hard to play JK at the three. And so, you know, in order to maximize JK, you have to slide Draymond to the five to give JK the space that he needs. And that means we're taking Draymond out of position. So we're experimenting with all of this, and it's not easy. It doesn't just fit hand in glove to be able to accomplish both. And so that's part of what we're experimenting with, and that's part of what we're looking at with different lineups.
Yeah, so the Warriors are still in experimentation mode, and I think what I hear there and what I saw, and I think we'll continue to see, because unless it fails spectacularly, well, we got bigger problems if Kuminga steps into the starting lineup and can't play very well over an extended period of time. But
which, so far, again, for five games into this part of the experiment, it's going well so far. 21 points a game, 47% shooting for Kuminga ever since he was elevated to the starting lineup.
No, I think he's done a good job. But my point is that if Draymond is best as the four, like you heard Kerr say, and Kerr, whether you believe it to be, I don't know, good or not, he views Kuminga as a four. What that means is the Warriors have finally gotten to the point where they are prioritizing Jonathan Kuminga at the power forward position over Draymond Green when all is equal. Now, I think that's to also help Draymond suppress his minutes a bit, keep him healthy, keep him fresh. But he clearly doesn't want to play Draymond as that smaller five like he had to do for the majority of last year and even sometimes in the year before, because he's afraid that Draymond, who's also quietly at an advanced age, will break down. So to me, it's twofold, but it does signal that the Warriors have now, after, you know, 3+ years, Kuminga's the priority. And that's not something we could say before this season.
And a really big time for Kuminga, too. When I did the show with Dan a few weeks ago, he asked me straight up, you know, would you give Kuminga the money that he wanted? I said no at the time because obviously he was coming off the bench. He wasn't really playing, I thought, at that level quite yet. And then he asked, you know, has Kuminga been playing to that level to where he's earned that money? And it was hard for me to really say yes to that point. Now, though, it just feels like we're seeing a totally different Jonathan Kuminga. He hit that three there to give the Warriors a 89-84 lead. The smile he had on his face, where just he feels, it looks to me like he has just become more and more of a focal point of that offense. And just with all the tools, the physical tools he has, the ability he has. Yeah, I'm not great with player comps. The one I always hear with him, though, is kind of like a smaller Kawhi Leonard. I'll absolutely take that. But I do feel like, yeah, that step one is getting Kuminga a much bigger role in this offense, to where he is more featured down the stretch. That does kind of take some of the pressure off of Steph to be that guy to carry this team in those late game situations. So far, it's going well. It's what we've seen hot starts before. You know, my big worry now with Kuminga is I don't want to see, you know, he's hot these next 2-3 games, and then suddenly teams adjust and he hits a wall and we're back into experimentation mode again.
Well, you might see that because he's 22 years old.
And there's going to be ups and downs. Exactly. Yeah. It's
well, also, I don't know what comp he is. I don't see Kawhi Leonard, though.
That's what I've heard. I'm not great with player comps either.
So. I would love for him to be Kawhi Leonard, but Kawhi Leonard averaged like 13 rebounds in college and he is much more of a physical presence, in my opinion, than Kuminga is. Doesn't mean Kuminga can't be good, but I
won't die on that hill. That's just...
No, I mean, I would love it. I just don't necessarily see it.
A Kawhi light almost, maybe.
We'll see. The other part of it, too, is trying to help Draymond age gracefully. And speaking of aging gracefully, let's go out to Tim in Raleigh. Oh, my gosh. I'm going there in April. I was just telling Cam I'll be out in Raleigh in April, Tim. It's one of my favorite cities in the country. What's going on, man? Welcome to the program. How are you?
What's up, Evan? How you doing, guys? Hey, I heard you earlier, you know, speaking about Steph aging gracefully. And, you know, I think that can happen. I think that the system can't revolve around him anymore, though, because if it does, he's going to run himself into the ground. I think where they dropped the ball, Evan, is that they should have started this transition a little, maybe last year, as far as making, I'm not going to say a focal point, Kuminga, and maybe some of the young guys, but just transition the system a little bit more pick and roll dominant, a little bit more playing to the talent instead of just having stuff running all over the place. If you go back to when KD was here, KD used to say the system is Steph Curry. He is the system. So for the system to be him, he's going to be running like a madman. I think if Steph went more towards a traditional point guard and they did empower Kuminga more, I think what we have to see now is we know Kuminga can do. Kuminga has won games for this team for the last 2 years, 2.5 years. We can find games that he pretty much, they won because of him. I think what has to happen now for him to really mentally go to the next level is the way he did against Houston that last week when he pretty much got that dagger layup with Steph and Dre on the bench. I think it has to happen while they're on the court together. I think Steph has to defer to him and let him take to either win or lose it with him on the court, right? Like last week when Steph took that ridiculous three and the two 24-second violations, Kuminga didn't touch the ball, either one of those shots, right? I think they got to let the kid do or die with them. So I think they can age gracefully. I think another thing, you know, if you guys give me a minute, you hear this Kerr talking about this 3-4 thing. And I think it's a bunch of hogwash, quite honestly. I think the great, great coaches – they can coach to the talent that they have. If you think about Belichick and how ridiculous smart he is and Greg Popovich, those guys can coach to the talent that they have. They can create a system around the talent. And my biggest drawback on Kerr is that he is so scared to do that. And I get it. He's won 4 titles, went to 6 championships around his Steph Curry dominant system. He is afraid to adjust the system to the talent that he has. And what do we get when we get that? We get a guy saying that Kuminga has to be this. You know, if Kuminga played for Eric Spoelstra or Popovich, they would find a way to empower Kuminga to be the best version of himself. And I don't think we would ever hear the words 3 or 4 or any of that. When is the last time any professional coach, we hear them get caught up in the jargon of he's a three, he's a four, he's a this, he's a that. They're just basketball players. Kuminga can great take rebounds. He can start the break. He can shoot the mid-range. His three-point shot is better than Pods. I mean, he can do things. And I feel like this whole trapping in a position is just our coach's shortcomings of being able to adjust his system to the talent. I love Kerr, but I think that if that had started last year, or maybe the Anthony Lamb, Ty Jerome years, if we had started experimenting with some of that empowerment then, right now we wouldn't be worrying about it in year four. Kuminga's mental makeup would be one where he knows what's happening, and it would happen and flow a lot easier, guys. So I just wanted to call and kind of chime in on that, man, because I feel that we kind of – I'm not going to say too little too late with Kuminga right now, but I think this could have happened a year and a half ago, maybe, you know, the Anthony Lamb, Ty Jerome years. I think it was a bonus year after we won the championship. That could have been looked at like a bonus year, like, hey, guys, we got one. Let's take a year and do something different and re-up for the next year. And I think we missed out on that. And I just wish our coach kind of really more aimed at developing something around the talent.
Gotcha.
He has.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tim. Yeah. No, I appreciate it. Sorry.
I don't hate what he said. I mean, he made good points there.
Well, there's one thing that, and look, I actually do agree with him on the Curry and Kuminga thing. I want to get to that in a minute, because the idea of positions, look, I agree that we kind of get stuck up on it, and largely, especially in like the up and down game that a lot of teams play, specifically like the Rockets and the Warriors, that game on Wednesday, they'd like to get up and down. But I think that the premise of what Kerr is saying is that Kuminga struggles offensively when there's not space. And that's why he, I think, views him as a four or whatever position, you know, you want to label him. But what Kerr is also saying is that Kuminga doesn't thrive when there are two non-shooting bigs on the floor, because they clog up all the space in the paint. Draymond is not someone whose jump shot you have to really respect. Trayce Jackson-Davis or Kevon Looney, whoever is the center,
not shooting,
is going to be in the paint. And so either he needs to be out there with two or three shooters, or he's not going to be in the game. And I think that is Kerr trying to literally maximize Kuminga. He's trying to help him. And that's why Draymond, I think, when the team is at full strength, is now coming off the bench, because he is going to that guy and saying, all right, you're going to play with Wiggins, you're going to play with Curry, and we're going to put someone else at the two or the three, whatever positionless basketball you're talking about, and then we're only going to have one non-shooting big. So I do think that Kerr is, he's saying he's a position, but he's more so talking about the fit that Kuminga needs to be the best version of himself right now.
Yeah, and I'll agree with one of the other points that Tim made, was just like, yeah, this probably could have been done last year. There was a lot of frustration with how many minutes Ty Jerome and Anthony Lamb got last year.
That was 2 years ago.
I thought it was last year.
That was 2 years ago.
But no, I was at the game last year where you know, Moses Moody, you know, he was sitting on the bench and fans started chanting to get Moody in. You know, they wanted to see Moses Moody last year. And there's a lot of frustration there. There's a lot of frustration to want to see Jonathan Kuminga last year. So, yeah, to Tim's point, you had chances to get more of these guys in. And, yeah, you wasted time with the likes of Ty Jerome and Anthony Lamb. And, yeah, that was time lost. And that's why Kuminga was frustrated last year. That's why he was complaining to who's our beat writer, CJ Holmes at the time, with the San Francisco Chronicle. You went to him and kind of complained to him in that story there. And there was a time last year we thought Kuminga was going to get traded just because he said he kind of lost faith really in Kerr's ability to develop him into a good player. So I like to think that we're kind of past that point. The way they're empowering him now, it's finally happened. But yeah, it is a long time coming, to say the least.
Ty Jerome's also up for sixth man of the year with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Like, wild how that works out.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, I'm not trying to defend those players being in at that time, but I can understand the thought process of, and I do disagree with the premise of using the year after a championship as a bonus year. No, if you win a championship, you're trying to run it back and win another championship. To me, that's not when you generally ease off. That's not when you pull up on the reins. That's when you try and double down. And so that season, Kuminga was 20 years old. Moody, I think, might have been 21. And in my opinion, they weren't ready to play big-time minutes. Also, if you remember at the beginning of that season, after the championship, not to relitigate history, but James Wiseman played a lot at the beginning of that season. And the Warriors started like 2-7. And at that point, I'm sorry, I can't give you 2 months to make mistakes and grow up as a player. We just won a championship. We need to start winning games. And so that's when I think Kerr basically started throwing all caution to the wind and started going to the Lambs, the Jeromes, and less to the Kamingas and the Moody's. I also do disagree. Look, last year, Kuminga started a lot of games. In fact, I was a bit perplexed at why the beginning of this season he didn't get as many minutes as he did, say, last year. Because we saw what happened. If you go look at his splits, when he plays more than 30 minutes, he's a far more effective player and was so last year than when he comes off the bench and plays less than 25. And so it's taken some time for them to, I think, be in a desperate position where they lack offense so much that he's the only player that really gives them that added scoring punch. Whether you believe he's a star or not, he's got a skill set that they lack, and that's scoring the basketball. So to me, last year, they did begin this process by process of elimination, and now we're beginning to see them, due to desperation, have to lean all the way in. We can continue the conversation on the other side. I'm sorry, we got to hit a break. I see Austin in San Jose. We'll get to you on the other side. 888-957-9570 is the number. Evan Giddings and Sam Lubman. We're back after this on 95.7 The Game.